Mishlei Perik, that's Proverbs, chapter 11, starting with verse 2. Now, I one time taped this. I one time did this chapter with the Rabbeinu Yonah, but there's been a request to do it again, so we're taping it again, and those that want to listen to both tapes could decide which one is better. Fine. Now, the Rabbeinu Yonah gives an introduction to the difference between the Tam and the Yosha. Okay? Right. The word Tam means perfection, and Yosha means straight. Okay? So, Tam is where you do not have any traits that interfere with your thinking. Right, that's a Tam. A Yosher is a certain intuition that a person has. Now, intuition is the creativity of the human being, and we don't know how it works, and you have the information, and then suddenly your mind goes in a certain direction towards the answer. You have a problem, you have a question, and your mind goes towards a certain direction. Now, the beginner thinker, his answers go in an incorrect direction. But after learning, let's say, 10 years, and so his intuition leads him to a straighter angle. We gave an example that I've given many times, that there was this guy that used to do acrobats on a plane, and they asked him, how does he avoid the mistakes? So he says he goes through every situation, that any problem that he could get into trouble, and he works out beforehand how he could get out of it. So he knows exactly for any given situation how to get out of it. So the interviewer asked him, what happens if you get into a situation that you never got into? It's a new situation. He says, because of all the thinking from beforehand, so I automatically know what to do. Okay? What he's saying is that if you train yourself in a certain area, then the intuition in that area gets better. And the training and thought in general will make your intuition better in all areas, but of course the area that you're most involved in will be, your intuition will be guided better. But however, you can be guided by training of the mind, where in general your intuition will be guided correctly, okay? So therefore, that's Yosha. Yosha is the person that his mind was trained in decision making. And he makes decisions in his intuition in his decision making, when he thinks the thing through and he has to make a decision, so his intuition guides him in the correct manner. Okay? That's Yosha. And the Tam is the person that his emotions don't interfere. Okay? So according to that, with that introduction that the Rabbeinu Yonah gives, then we could give the explanation of the pasuk. Okay? So we said that the perfection of the Yosher, that means his intuition is in the right direction, will protect him. The Rabbeinu Yonah says will protect him from making mistakes. Okay? But however, the crookedness of the rebellious person. The rebellious person over here means he rebels against thought. He's anti-thought. Now the question is, what is, according to King Solomon, what is anti-thought? Anti-thought is not a person that's against mathematics or physics. It doesn't mean he doesn't think. And he does think in different areas. He tries to make decisions. He thinks through areas and tries to make decisions. But however, let's say, for instance, I want to tell the person that a certain relationship that we should have, and I define clearly how we should work our relationship. And the person says it's not necessary to be so precise. So the question is, what does that mean, it's not necessary to be so precise? You see, the answer is that people are afraid of being precise, because that would pin them down, and it wouldn't allow their emotions the freedom to operate, you see. So therefore, the precision of thought, you see, That's in everyday life, in making that decision, and where it's clearly defined, so your emotions can't, even if you have, you know, emotions that want to affect your thinking process, it becomes harder for it to do because of the definition. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it becomes harder to do. So a person that doesn't want that precision in his everyday life, it means he wants his emotions, he wants to give rein to his emotions to operate in a totally free manner. So he does not define things precisely, therefore he doesn't like things to define things precisely. He might be very definitive in mathematics. He might be very definitive in business, but he won't be definitive in his personal life. And the reason is because he wants his freedom. He's afraid to be pinned down and have to go against his emotions. That is how we're defining a bogey, that he's anti-thought. Okay? So because he allows the emotions freedom, so there's a distortion of the thinking. So whenever he does have a plan, that when he works out a plan, that emotion could affect his planning and his decision making, and he could make mistakes. Okay? So the pasuk says that the perfection of the straight person will protect him from making mistakes, and the crookedness of the rebellious person, the anti-thought person, will destroy him. Okay? So we wanted to know what is the subject and what are the opposites here. Okay, that was the question. So the thing is, we said that the opposites happens to be the adjectives, not the nouns. The adjectives is the tam, the perfection of the yosher, and the crookedness of the bogey. Okay? We wanted to know what type of opposites are these two types of opposites. And the thing is like this. There is a certain type of opposite that one is positive and the other is the absence of the positive. Like, for instance, a shadow is the absence of light, or darkness is the absence of light. Okay? There is no positive type of blackness. It's just the absence of light. Now, the same thing here. We want to say in decision making, there are opposites that either you make mistakes or you've removed that part of you which make mistakes. Okay? And we wanted to say that the subject is mistakes. Okay? Either you have mistakes or you've removed, you have that quality which causes mistakes, or you remove that component which causes and brings about mistakes. You have removed. So those are the two opposites that are in the category of mistakes. And so that's the way we wanted to learn the pasuk. We're doing the pasuk dalet, and it says the wealth will not benefit you in the day of catastrophe, and charity will save you from death. Okay. So we have a few questions. One is, how does charity save you from death? That's one thing. Two is, there are people that have wealth and it does help them. In the time of catastrophe, if they need an operation and they have the money, they can take the operation. Somebody doesn't have the money, they can't. Mm-hmm. So you see, it does help. And how does charity save you from death? Okay? So that's the... And also, what's the opposites? What's the two sides of the pasuk? What are the opposites? Even what are the opposites here? Well, we wanted to say first that tzedakah, the person that gives charity is a kindness. Like a chesed. It's a type of chesed. It would fit under the type of chesed. So the question is, who is the other guy that his wealth will not benefit him. It means he's not a kind person. Okay, he doesn't give tzedakah, so then who is he? So the closest opposite that you will find will be a person that keeps justice, but he is not kind. Okay? What I mean is like this. You have to be careful. In halacha, incorporated in halacha, is both justice and kindness. There is justice that if I owe somebody money, I'm obligated to pay him. That's justice. Okay? But however, if a poor man needs money, that is not justice, that's kindness. But the halachic system deals, they incorporate in the halachic system both these aspects of Jewish life. But however, we're talking about certain type of people. Not halacha, we're talking about a certain type of people. So we say there is a certain person that is kind, and there is a certain person that is just. Okay? So that means the first person is not an evil person, he is a just person, because there's lots of parts of Mishle that tell the consequences of the evil person. But however, here we're talking about a just person, we're comparing the difference between a just person and a kind person. Okay? So that are the two opposites that we're dealing with in this pasuk. Now, somebody asked, what is the nature of the kind person and the righteous person? What's the difference in nature? The thing is, just pure logic, only if the pasuk is talking about that. It could be that the pasuk is not talking about that. Then we, in other words, in a discussion, we might want to answer that question. That becomes an important question. We want to know the nature of the difference. But since what we're doing here is working out the pasuk and specifically learning the logic and thinking out step by step each pasuk, so therefore, this, since that is not necessary for the understanding of the pasuk, that would be a side question, which we are not dealing with. The question is how is a kind person and a just person considered opposites? The answer is there are two types of opposites. There's a qualitative opposite, right? Like either I'm moving or I'm not moving, okay? There's no means. Then there's a quantitative thing where, like for instance, hot, warm, and cold, right? Those are opposites, okay? Now, in the quantitative sense, there's a certain development of a person, right? And the development starts with justice. That's why halacha must always come first, because it must start with justice. Now, you can become a just person, but not a kind person. Halacha will help you be a just person. Okay, even though you'll do the acts of kindness, but there's a further development in being a kind person, which is different. You see, it's insofar as development of the human being. Okay? Now, these two opposites can't be in the same place at the same time. Yes, and it can't be. In other words, you have many parts of you, like, for instance, you might have kindness, you might have vengeance. People have opposite emotions. They do things, different situations awaken different emotions, opposite things. And certain situations demand that you act differently, you see. So the thing is, kindness and justice. Justice is straight. I don't owe this poor person any money. That's it. That's justice. It's very different than, and they can never be in the same place at the same time.
You see? Oh,
yeah, it's just like hot and cold is opposite. In other words, let's say, I'll give you an example. Let's say, for instance, we're talking about, insofar as hot, warm, and cold, we're talking about burning your hand. Okay? Now, let's say 100 degrees would burn your hand. Now, 90 degrees won't. Now, what's the difference between 90 and 100? Like, quantity, it doesn't sound much. Same thing with driving. 55 is the limit. Well, if you go 65, well, that's not an opposite. But one place you won't get a traffic citation, one place you will.
When you go
Yeah, and right. So therefore, right, the same thing with hot and cold. One scalds your hand and one doesn't scald. Right, right. So here is also we're saying that the person is either just, or there's a further development where he will have the quality of justice, right? But he also adds to that kindness. Is it? So the question is that over here you're saying we're saying a quantity, but what is the change in the person, right? Well, we're saying that there's a change in the nature of the person from the just person to the kind person. It's a change in his nature, that his nature is different. In other words, insofar as nature, in other words, if I keep halacha, I could do a just act, I could do a kind act, I'm still the same person. But insofar as Mishlei is concerned, where we're talking about personality, so therefore the just personality is different than the kind personality. Insofar as personality is concerned, they will react differently in a certain. I'll give you an example. Let's say, for instance, a person needs help. Let's say a person has a bad time. He has consequences from his own actions. So the just person will say, yeah, he deserves it. The kind person will say, yes, he deserved it. I mean, he sees the fact, but I should help him. He feels that I should help him. I should help the guy. You understand? And where I should help, I mean, you can't help everybody, you know? Yeah. But the thing is that there's a certain feeling that of different feeling than the first guy, than the just person. It's a personality change.
I see the difference.
The question is, then you can define every quantity as opposites. That's the question. The answer is no. Let's say, for instance, insofar as melting steel is concerned, is there any difference between 100 degrees and 101 degrees? They both won't have any effect. They're both, insofar as melting steel is concerned, that's called cold. That'll be cold. You see? So therefore, the quantity must make a difference. You see? It must have an effect. Okay? So the question here, what is the effect on the person? Okay? We're saying that the effect on the person is the effect of the personality change, which is very different than the first. Than the first person. First person is a, we don't know what this personality is. That's not part of the pasuk, right? But the thing is that one person would feels just and he feels obligated. He would never steal a penny. He would never go over the line. It would just bother him. It would bother him. The second guy is that plus that he'll feel bad for other people. He'll feel an obligation to do kindness and help people when they're in need. Well, we're leaving the question for now. Ken still has a problem with the opposites to see in what way exactly are they opposites. He sees the quantitative difference, but he doesn't see that they're opposites, okay? Let's wait a while. It could be we could answer it a little better later, and maybe not. We'll see. And now we have to deal with the next question. How does charity save you from death? Okay? Now, the thing is the first half of the pasuk says, in a day of catastrophe. Okay? So we're talking about, in other words, everybody must die, right? I mean, it can't save you from death that you will not die. But, however, it means, even though certain people learn this pasuk, that it means that you will not die, meaning in Olam Haba, in the world to come. You won't, that's what it means, not die. But we're taking it in a practical sense, that in a day of catastrophe, one person will be able to save himself, and the other person will not be able to save himself. So what it means over here, charity will save you from death, means in that type of situation that it will save him, a certain situation will save, in that situation, this person will be able to save himself, while the just person in a catastrophic situation will fail. Okay? So we have like this. We have a person that's a fool or a wicked person. That person will cause himself to fail in everyday life, in usual life. A just person will be successful in everyday life. He'll work it out, but when there's a certain catastrophe, that will hurt him. Okay? He will fail there. While the kind person, in that catastrophic situation, he will be successful. That's what we have so far. Now the question is, what does he have that will help save him in a catastrophic situation that will not help that the knowledge of the just person or the personality of the just person that will not help him? Going back to the puzzle, the question is that what does the money have to do with the just person? The answer is that he made his money through a just system. He never stole a penny. He never stole. You see? He never stole. So therefore, that's why he's a just person. But he won't give to tzedakah. I mean, maybe halachically, I mean, but we're talking about a personality. So therefore, he won't help a person except where the halacha demands. But otherwise, he will not go out of his way to help a person. He doesn't see the value in that. You see, while the kind person will. The kind person will see the value and have a desire to help their people. And the question is, how do you know it's not a miser? In other words, it's just a person that does it, that's a miser. It has nothing to do with justice. Therefore, he doesn't give money. Miser is a fool. Therefore, he'll belong to different parts of Mishlei where we say the consequences of being a fool. Well, you know, this type of fool has certain consequences. Being a miser, we'll have to analyze that. But here we're talking about that doesn't seem to be pointing, when you talk about kindness, I'm not going to jump to miser. If I talk about kindness, I talk to about unkind. In other words, the opposites must be only one step, no more. So the opposite of kind is not kind. You see? Unless I got our opposites in that, we answered the question. There's kind and there is not kind, okay? Those are two opposites. Now the question is, when you talk about a non-kind person, is the person a fool? Is he not kind because he's a fool? Then you would have between a chacham, a intelligent person, and a fool, or you'd have a righteous person and an evil person. But when you're dealing with kind, then the opposite would be not kind. So, and the only step that's closest to unkind would be just. He is just, and therefore he is. Therefore, that's what the pasuk is talking about. We're talking about a just person and a kind person, okay? And the opposite is kind and not kind, okay? The question is that the pasuk says tzedakah. Since it's talking about tzedakah, and the first half says that your wealth will not benefit you, so the question is, maybe the pasuk is talking about wealth, okay, and the opposites is wealth. That happens to be true. You're absolutely right. We are talking about wealth, okay. But however, there's two ways of relating to wealth, okay? One is kind. I relate to wealth through kindness. It's not, in other words, it's a type of kindness. Or I only relate to wealth only through justice. I only relate to money only through justice. So you are right that we are talking about money, but there's two ways of relating to money. One is through kindness. And one is through charity in particular, but there's a certain personality which the charitable person has, you see, different than the just personality. Otherwise, if both people got their wealth through justice, okay, one person stops there and he doesn't go into kindness. The other one will. He'll use his money or whatever is necessary. He will use it. But I think the pasuk will also, since we're talking about a certain personality, I don't think they'll make a difference if he's rich or poor. Okay? But you are right. The kind person will relate to his money differently than the just person. Okay? And now we're dealing with the problem. How charity saves you from death. Okay? So we said that everybody dies. But the pasuk is talking about a situation of catastrophe. So therefore, it's not a matter of living forever. The question is saving you during this catastrophic event? So what we said was a certain order. We said there's the fool that will in everyday life will do stupid things and cause the consequences in everyday life. And then there's the chacham and the tzaddik and the righteous person that he will live in life a certain type of successful life. But however, in a catastrophe, he can't fail. While the kind person, even in a catastrophic situation, he can be successful. Well, we say successful, you have to be careful here, is because definitely Rabbi Akiva was a kind person. He was definitely on that level and way beyond. You see? But there's certain things which is out of your realm. In other words, we're talking within the laws of nature, what's within your realm of control. What's out of your realm of control, so then you can't do anything. So even a person on a very high level, a catastrophe could happen to them unless God intervenes. But insofar as the laws of nature is concerned, the only way out is through chachma. Sometimes even chachma will not help you. Wisdom will not help you working it out. You're in such a situation that there's no way out. Okay? So therefore, you can't be helped. We're talking about in a situation where wisdom could help you and pull you through this type of situation. Okay? So therefore, there's a certain quality of the kind person that will help him not make a mistake in this situation that the just person in a certain type of catastrophic situation, he will make a mistake. There's a question like this. Let's say, for instance, you compliment a person, and there are certain people that have a bad reaction to compliments. Now, the purpose of a compliment is to help a person develop towards good traits. In other words, you would never compliment a person that I like the way you beat this person up. You did it, you know, like scientifically beat a person up. We would, a mafia guy might compliment another mafia guy in that. We would not. Why? Because we would only compliment the person that's within our value system. So therefore, a compliment is really to benefit a person, okay? But let's say, for instance, you compliment the person has an adverse reaction, right? Like, let's say a person is feeling guilty about something, and you compliment him, you're going to awaken his guilt. That's not a benefit. That compliment was not a benefit for that person. You also find this in tzedakah, how to give tzedakah. It's not only a matter of giving tzedakah, but knowing how the poor person, feels about receiving the tzedakah, the charity, so that you must understand the nature of the poor person and then work out different ways of giving it in such a way that you should not hurt him. In the least possible harm to him. It's not only the money, you see, by not humiliating him and making him feel like he's a nothing, you see. So therefore, to be kind, you must know psychology, and enough psychology to read the person at the time that you're giving him the help, and exactly how to help him. In other words, when you help a person, you can help a person, you only think about the thing that he needs, but then there's also something else, the way he receives the help. Certain people can't accept help in a certain way, so you have to do it in a certain way. There's different, in other words, it's infinite, you know what I mean? Each person is going to be different, okay? So the thing is that, so there's two steps to giving charity. The first step in giving charity is whether you know this idea of human nature, you must give charity. You must help them physically. That's the priority. That must come first. You can't say, well, since I don't know how to do this, I'm not going to do it. You can't say that. You must give tzedakah. Okay? But then there's a further development where you must have knowledge of human nature so that when you do the person a favor, it is in the best possible way. So there's the act of the kindness and then the understanding of the person how to do it in the best possible way and what this person really needs. Sometimes a person wants something that's really not good for him, and you might know this. So therefore, you must, to really be kind to a person, you must know his nature and what's good for him and what's not good for him. Okay? See, the just person does not need that. Like, let's say you keep giving tzedakah. A person that gives tzedakah halachically, he has kept the halacha, he's given tzedakah, but he doesn't know the nature of the person. So the just person, all he knows is the subject of justice. You see? So therefore, the just person will just do the act of justice. But he does not take into consideration another person's feelings. Okay, that's out of his realm. And the question is that it seems to be that you can only be kind to a person that you know really well. No, the answer is no. First of all, you should be kind. Like I said, you should always give tzedakah. And second of all, if you train yourself in this way of reading people, you could do it pretty fast. Like, for instance, Paro, Rabbi Chait one time pointed out that Paro asked Yaakov when he first came there, how old are you? Now, immediately, bells rang in Yaakov's mind. When you first greet a person, the first thing you don't ask is how old you are. You know what I mean? That's not the first thing. You see? So the thing is that this guy, he saw, and you see from Yaakov doesn't answer the question. He says, I didn't live as long as my parents. I don't remember the exact pasuk, the exact words, but he says, I didn't live as long as my parents, and I didn't have a good life. You see? So he's taking away his jealousy. So even though he was very old, he was old, and Paro might have been jealous of him, he took away that jealousy. He would have died literally. Right, here you see where, if he didn't read him correctly and he answered him correctly, he would have died literally. The same thing you also find by Abraham. The Dr. Kanami Bali Tosos explains when Paro asked him, he says, why did you lie to say that your wife was your sister? He says, why did you lie? He says, because I didn't see the fear of the Lord here. What does that mean? It means, so he says, well, where did he see that? The Dasa Kanam asked, this commentary, Dasa Kanam asked, where did he see that? He says, because when they first walked in, they didn't ask him, you just came on a long trip, is there anything we could help you? They said, who's that beautiful woman? He saw already that these people only think of themselves. The other person doesn't matter, you see? So he's afraid for his life. Now, if you don't know how to read a person, you could get killed very easily. Here you see a catastrophic situation where you must read the person immediately. It actually saved Abraham and Yaakov from being killed. We're not talking about if God would have helped them. I mean, God could have intervened, and God did. At a certain point by Abraham, God did intervene. Okay? But I'm talking about simply within the laws of nature, which is the book of Mishlei. There are other parts which talk about where God intervened. But insofar as the book of Mishlei is concerned, if you don't know, there's certain situations where if you don't know how to read another person, you could be dead. And two is, if you don't know psychology and you don't know how to read people, you don't know how to read yourself, you could also make terrible mistakes because your emotions will affect you in how you decide. In a catastrophic situation, you can't afford any type of mistake. It's instantaneously decision-making. You see? So the just person knows how to live within a certain system, but where his emotions are suddenly turned different ways, or a different emotion is awakened that he doesn't even realize, he's going to make terrible decisions. So in two ways, we see that the kind person, because of his knowledge of human nature, will protect him from actually being destroyed, while the just person, even though in general he will be a successful person because he's a real chacham and he's a thinker and he's a just person, so he thinks correctly, but however, that lack of knowledge could, in a catastrophic situation, could cause him to make a mistake how he speaks to people, or in his own decision making, because he doesn't know his own emotions that well, he doesn't know how to read himself, so in those situations, it could totally destroy him. The question is that it seems, somebody asked the question, that it seems to be a stretch from what the Pasuk is saying, that charity saves you from death, to being a psychologist, to knowing psychology, okay? Right. The answer is that, see, every Pasuk, when the greats write, they only write the top part, not all the underlayers. And you must have in mind where you're going, okay? You have to understand that this book of Proverbs, you have to understand the subject of the book. And the subject of the book is personalities and how personalities, different personalities, how it causes you to act. So that we must always get down, basically, to some type of either action that's going to lead to a catastrophe, that's going to lead to consequences, and what that quality is in the human being and how it causes them to do the act. You see, because that is the subject of Mishlei. So therefore, we're going to have to get down to that. That is the subject. And he assumes, King Solomon assumes, that you know this. You see? So therefore, he writes just the facts, and then he allows you to go down on your own, to go and find, get down to the consequences, and the personality which caused the consequences, whether good or bad. That's why we made a very clear distinction between giving tzedakah according to halacha, that's one category, and then there's the personality of a person that gives tzedakah. Two different things. You could give tzedakah according to halacha, and you do not have the personality of a charitable person. Two different things. One is the act that I keep halacha. But here we're talking about developing a personality that's in line with the ideas of Torah. That your personality develops according to the ideas of Torah. That's a different subject. And therefore, every pasuk must come down to that at some point. We already said that the Tom is a person that has no addiction, that any trait will force him to act in a incorrect way, in a harmful manner. Okay? So the Yosher, the person that's a Yosher, we said that comes from training of the mind. That's not natural. Where your intuition will be guided, where you will be guided by your intuition, that comes through Chachman. It doesn't come naturally. Based on that introduction, the Pasuk says that Pasuk Hay in verse 5 in chapter 11 says the righteousness of the perfected person will straighten his path, and in his wickedness the wicked will fail, will fall. Okay? What we said is that the first half, in other words, the righteousness, which we don't know what that means, the righteousness of the Tumim somehow will cause him to have a straight path, and the Rabbeinu Yonah says means in his actions. In other words, we're talking about a person that's a Tum, but not a Yosher. He's not addicted to any one trait, any one area, but he has not been trained. Somehow that will straighten out his actions, whatever that means. Okay? So that's what we're trying to find out. What's the tzitkas tamim? What's the righteousness of the tam? How does that lead to straightening out his path? And what is the wickedness of the wicked? It says the wickedness of the wicked. What does that mean, the wickedness of the wicked? These are the problems that we're dealing with. Now, since we are not talking about a yashar, so when it says that he'll straighten his path, the yosher means to straight. In other words, it's not a yosher, but somehow the Rabbeinu Yonah says he'll straighten his actions. In other words, a yosher is a thinker, person that's involved in thought. The Rabbeinu Yonah is trying to deal with that problem, that since we're not dealing with the yosher, we're dealing with the righteousness of a tam, so then how does that lead to yosher? Because yosher comes straightening of the mind, that natural intuition must come through chachma itself, must come through study. So, and since we're talking about tam, he doesn't have it, so he says somehow that'll straighten out his path. Okay? And the wickedness of the wicked somehow will cause him to be wicked. The wicked will fall, right? So the question is what is this righteousness that's a cause of the tam, and what is this wickedness that's the cause of the downfall of the Russia? The approach is that we want to say that a tam will be one possibility, that somehow that with the righteousness of the tam he will become a yosher. That is not what we're saying. That's impossible, because yosher can only come through knowledge. The better your intuition of the right way is to go through study. And if you're a tam, then it won't affect your thinking process. So you'll be able to sit down and learn and develop your intuitive traits. Okay? But however, he's saying that it'll straighten out his path. Okay? So we have to define, where we have to go from here is to see where the difference between the action of a person that has not been trained in thinking, but he is a tam, the difference between him and the person that is also besides being a tam, he is also a yosher, his intuition is straight, and he has chokma. What is the difference between the two? Okay? Insofar as their actions are concerned, we'd have to see the difference between the two. I think the problem is, even though we're not discussing the yosher, but to understand the correct actions of the tam, since correct actions is guided by a certain intuition and a certain way of thinking, so therefore, in other words, you think a problem through. You're going to think a problem through, right? Every human being must think a problem through. If he doesn't think, then we're not talking about him, right? But however, so the tam thinks through, but he hasn't been trained in thought. Okay? The yosher, after he's been trained in thought, also thinks through his actions. Okay? So insofar as his action, how he thinks through his practical everyday life, the question is, what's the difference in the way they think insofar as their everyday life is concerned? Now, the pasuk is not dealing with the yosher insofar as he's undoing his problems. We're talking about where the yosher and the tam do not have any addictions. The only difference is one has a trained mind and one doesn't. He has a natural mind.
Okay.
What's the difference between how the trained mind deals with everyday problems, analyze everyday problems, to the untrained mind without an addiction? That's what we want to know, how they analyze the problems of everyday life. How are they going to look at everyday life? Right. First of all, you have to realize that we're talking about only in practical everyday life. That's the way the Rabbeinu Yonah is talking about. We're not talking about in abstract ideas. Okay? So in everyday life, people think things through. That is going to be a difference between the way the yosher analyzes everyday life and the tam analyzes everyday life. One is more precise in his understanding. He defines his terms clearly. He defines the problem clearer. Because he's been trained. The natural mind will also see things and it'll guide him. His intuition will not be distorted. The tam's intuition. But natural intuition will not be distorted, but in his thinking process he is not that precise. You see, he will not be that precise. There's a certain precision that the Yosha has in not only in abstract field and definitely in his everyday life. That's the book of Mishlei, try and help you think correctly in everyday life. While the Tom will think straight with his natural mind, because since he doesn't have any addiction pulling him from one place to the other, so his natural mind will be straight but not precise. He's lacking that precision which the Yosha has. So we wanted to say that that possibility that there's a difference between the Tam and the Yosha, it does not fit in with the words of the Rabbeinu Yonah, who seems to say that insofar as actions are concerned, the way you act, the practical for everyday life, the Tam will have a straight mind, and his intuition in everyday life, in the simple every decisions of everyday life and his actions, that he will think correctly, and in that way his mind, in other words, that much it straightens the mind, But, however, insofar as perfection of the soul is concerned, that he will not have, and insofar in sciences and abstract thinking, in that way, that type of training, you need training for it to be a yosher. But for everyday life, for the thinking that is necessary to be successful in everyday life, that is enough to be a Tom, that you're evenly keeled. In other words, because of the depth of other sciences, that needs training, you see, and there the perfection of the Yosher the Tam is the removal of the bad traits. That's the Tam. The Yosher is working towards positive traits. So the Tom is the person that's evenly keeled in any emotion that is an extreme and that he becomes addicted to because of the extreme, so then he has to work and undo that. Okay, and being a Tom, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, he could either be born a Tom, or you could straighten out the bad traits that are affecting you, could undo those traits. Now, the Yosha, according to the Rabbeinu Yonah, is working towards straightness, okay? What he does is he gives up in other words, the Tom will enjoy the physical pleasures. He's not drawn to learning, but he'll think straight. Many times you meet a person, you're amazed how straight they think. They never studied, and they think very straight. In other words, those people, the odds are they're evenly keeled. You know what I mean? There's not too many emotions pulling them, and they just naturally think straight. Okay? Now, but the Yosher also wants to make sure he gets this type of intuition, the straight type of thinking, and his love and drawn to the straightness, to the ways of Chachma, he starts giving up the physical pleasures. Okay? Now, physical pleasure is not an addiction. There's addictions and there's physical pleasures. Torah is not against physical pleasures unless you're ready for it. And the Rabbeinu Yonah explains clearly, very clearly in his introduction in Pasuk Gimel to the Tam of the Yosha, is that the learning is not from the conscience, but the learning is from the animalistic part of the human being. It's a change in what and why he learns. It's like a pleasure. It becomes totally an addiction. He uses the word taiva, which is addiction. He's addicted to learning, and therefore he gives up other physical pleasures that take away his energy from this addiction. You see? So he's striving towards this, the world of wisdom and the world of intuition, a correct intuition in the world of ideas. You see? So he gives up the physical pleasures. The Tom doesn't have to give up the physical pleasures because he lives correctly, he thinks correctly, and at the level of the Tom, then you should enjoy the physical pleasures. If you give up the physical pleasures, then that's the conscience that's forcing you. You're not enjoying yourself. It's the conscience. That is not what we're looking for, a person that's guided by the conscience. We're trying to change a person from guided by his conscience to change over to be guided by the animalistic part of you. And all your wisdom, all your drive and all your addictions come from the animalistic part of you and all that pleasure. And so therefore you give up on the physical, you start giving up on the physical pleasures, so you should have more energy to the world of learning, the world of ideas, and the world of having a straight idea, clear idea, to understand that it's on target, that it's clear, not just accepting it has to be straight. The mind demands it, that it's a straight, clear thought, and the mind demands this type of thought. That's the yosha, not the tam. The tam is evenly keeled, means he doesn't have any addictions. So when he thinks on superficial areas, you know what I mean, like by business, everyday life, you understand? So these things he will naturally think correctly. His mind is straight because there's nothing pulling it in one direction or the other. There's nothing pulling his mind in one direction or the other. You see? That is the tam. But however, the yosha wants more than that. He's going for more. And he's going for a life of the love of learning. I mean, by love of learning, it really means that you, like an animalistic person, like he's a person in love. You see? He's drawn by that feeling. It's a different feeling. Only then should you start giving up the physical world. Now, but until that point, if you give up the physical world, then you're just giving in to the conscience, which is good, but, I mean, the learning is good. The learning is definitely good, but you have to recognize that you're a person that's guided by your conscience. You're guided by your conscience, then how are you going to get to the pleasure? There's a medrash that says if a person had a chance to enjoy the physical world and he doesn't, he loses his portion in the world to come. What it means is that he's guided by his conscience, so he gives up pleasure. Because of his conscience, he gives up pleasure. That is not what we're looking for. What we're looking for is a person that's driven by the pleasure of study. He's drawn to a certain type of yashra, straight type of thinking, and he must get that clarity. In other words, you could spend hours on one place to get that clarity that totally fits in. And if it doesn't, he can't, you know what I mean? He recognizes that. Doesn't mean he can't move ahead, but he recognizes that it's not clear. It's not clear.
What we're doing now.
So therefore, we're saying that the tzedek of the tam straightens out his path. And what's the tzedek? Justice means, like, you know, like they always have of justice, they have the blind woman with the weights, right? It's evenly, like everything you have to look at, like you can't be drawn to one person over the other. You have to be blind to the people, just to the facts, based on the facts, who is right and who is wrong. You have to really know, like, not to be drawn from one to the other. If there's anything pulling you, that would be very bad. So he says, that evenly keeledness of the tam, that very quality of the tam, makes him think correctly. You understand? In other words, I wouldn't connect that with thinking correctly. Usually I think that, yeah, look, either I think correctly, I don't. But we're saying that the evenly keeledness, that he's evenly keeled, so that when he thinks about life, when he thinks about his personal problems, whatever he has to do, since he's not drawn one way or another, in that way he is straight. As I said many times, you meet a person that seems to be so straight, like when you talk to the guy, even though he has no training, there's a certain enjoyment in talking to the guy. The guy is just straight. He just sees everything straight on. You see? This thing, whether you're a Tom or a Yosha, has nothing to do with IQ. Okay? You must have, the minimum is you must have the ability to understand Mishlei or Musar. Because we said that the simplest, the least abstract of all the studies in Torah is the study of Musar. That's the least abstract. You must have that much ability you must have. You see? And if you do have that, then you could gain all the qualities and all the traits that Mishlei says you can. It never says if you have a good mind or not. If you want to get into halacha, you might not have the mind for halacha. Halacha, you have to have a certain level of mind. If you want to go into physics, you have to have a certain level of mind. If you want to go into metaphysics, study of God, I mean, definitely it's even more abstract. That's dependent on the mind. But to become a Tam and a Yosher, you must have the ability to understand Musar. Then you can be straightened out. So the Pasuk is saying that we're defining that Tzidkas as evenly keeled. The justice is, you have to be evenly keeled, meaning that you can't look at one person over another. When two people come before you and they're in an argument, you can't look at anything about their personality, about them at all. It's only the case, like you have X and Y in front of you. Like you, when you're learning Gemara, you have X and Y, you work out the cases. That's all it has to be, no more than an X and a Y. Once you pull from one to the other, so then that's not evenly keeled. So Tzidkas over here, we're saying, is the evenly keeledness of the Talmud allows him to be a thinker. You see, in the area that he thinks and what he does in everyday life, practical everyday life, and he has no desire to become a thinker, so he's naturally a straight thinker in that area. Right. The Rasha is a person that is guided by his emotions. In other words, like this. The Rasha could be a person that's a thinker, but he accepts certain premises, and therefore he, in other words, like friends, let's say a person will say, well, what college am I going to? So he has to think through, and he'll think through all the different colleges, what are the benefits, right? There's another question, should I go to college? Or should I go to college right away? You see, that question, the Russia doesn't think through. That's basic premises about the value of college. He has certain values that he doesn't question. The Yosher, and the Tom is also not going to question. He just doesn't have anything drawing him one way or another. Naturally, he doesn't have one thing drawing him another. But however, the Yosher, the Yosher definitely questions his basic premises. On what premise am I operating? He questions his basic premise. That's the difficulty of being the Yosher. The Russian never will question his basic premises. So he accepts his basic premises, and then he makes a plan based on that. You see? In other words, it's not whether I'm going to conquer another country. I'm going to work on it. The plan is, what's the best way of conquering it? It's not whether, should I conquer? Is this a just war? That's not the question. The question is, how should I conquer? You see? That is the difference between that is the Russia. So on the other hand, is the Tom, he doesn't have any of these. He naturally thinks, he won't question his basic premises, but in his everyday life, it's naturally he's not going to do evil. He's going to do that which is right, because that's the way he is. He's evenly keeled. He doesn't have anything drawing him to do anything extreme. So therefore, he naturally will be just, you see? And his evenly keeledness will make him be just, and will make him think correctly in these areas. But however, the Rasha, since he is drawn by the basic by certain extreme emotions that have taken over certain addictions, so therefore that's going to cause him to fail. You see, that quality will cause him consequences, will cause him to fail. Because, well, that's basically the whole book of Mishlei, to tell you, show you in each case how, in what way the Russia have that quality causes him to fail, and what are the consequences of his actions. In other words, his basic drives, that which is driving him, he can't question. What's driving him? Like, let's say, for instance, a person is learning he has a low lishma. At a certain point, he questions, what's my low lishma? What's my incorrect motive for learning? He questions his motives. He's willing to look down, and maybe his motives are incorrect, even if when he's doing the right action, his motives might be incorrect. So you might have to go back to that. But that's the yosher, though. But that's the yosher. But the Russia, on the other hand, see, the Russia, on the other hand, he doesn't question this. See, that's why he says, Berish also, in his wickedness, and these qualities, his qualities, cause him to fail. See, that causes the Russia to fail. You see? While the Tom, even though he didn't investigate his basic premises, because he's evenly keeled, naturally, he will be a yosher, and he will not fail in his everyday life. And the question is, in general, the book of Mishlei, he seems to repeat himself so many times, like the Russia is going to fail, and here we're just saying that the very drive that drives him to wickedness, that drive will cause him to fail, okay? Cause him to look at life incorrectly, you see? While the evenly keeledness of the Tom, even though he's not a yosher, it will help him be successful, so he will not fail. That's how we're comparing the pasuk. But the question is, I mean, this is all of Mishlei. All of Mishlei, I mean, maybe we're defining our terms a little better, but, you know, all of Mishlei is dealing with the really one idea. And that is that Ezu Chacham Haroes Anolad, who is wise, he who sees the consequences of his actions. But the person that doesn't see the consequences of his actions, so that's all you'd have to learn. In other words, I mean, Mishlei is not that abstract. Pirkei Avos is probably more abstract. There are Tosfos that are more abstract than this, you see. So the thing is the question is, so why does he repeat himself? It's a simple idea. Why does he have to repeat himself so many times? The answer is that this book is written for a beginner. It's for the person that's starting out. The basic foundation of after halacha, for all thought, for a person that wants to develop in the world of Torah ideals, beyond the halacha, this is his first step into that world. Okay? Before he even gets into philosophy. You see, he must make sure that he thinks correctly. Now, beginner, as you know, you have to go over ideas from every different angle. You understand? It's not enough to say it over the idea once. It's a matter of going over it again and again from every different angle so that it becomes clear to the beginner. Then afterwards, you tell him one idea, and it's clear to him, and he works it out himself. But he has to have that. He must be able to. He must have the time to work through. And over here, we're not only working through just an idea, but it's to affect our personality. In other words, even when you move on from Mishlei, you must come back to it, because many times, I mean, you could be moving on to the world of Yosher before you complete Tom. Okay? You could be working on and moving on in there, and even moving on in philosophy, different ideas, but you have to keep coming back to see where the emotions are affecting you. And so therefore, for that person that's, for the beginner, first of all, it's for the beginner, and two, it's because it's necessary to look at it from every different angle, again and again and again and again, to affect your whole personality. You see? It's not enough just to understand the ideas. It's a matter of making these ideas like they become part of you. That this is your modus operandi. This is the way you operate. You see? That's a different, you see, that's why it keeps going over from every different angle, every which angle you look at it. And also, in other words, like this, there might be universal that the nature of the wicked person, that very quality which causes them to be wicked, will cause them to fail, right? Well, then there are many different aspects of a wicked person. There's many different midos, many different traits. So he must go through every detail, every single trait, and show you how it causes the consequences and what way it affects you. This pasuk is more universal. He's just trying to explain that even a person that's not a thinker, but he's evenly keeled, he'll be more successful. A person that's not trained in thought, he's not a yosha, will be more successful than the rasha. Why? Because the rasha will fail by virtue of the very quality which caused him to be wicked, that will cause him to make terrible errors in life, and it'll cause him to fail. While the straightness of the tam, the evenly keeledness of the tam, so he'll have a straight, it does not affect his intuition, so his natural intuition in everyday life and things that he thinks about will always be straight. It's just that he doesn't work on it, he's not drawn to the subject of study itself. But however, that evenly keeledness will make him more successful than an abstract thinker who's a rasha, who has traits that cause him to fail. And one other thing, and that is this, is that when the beginner starts learning, he has certain universals. Then when he learns the pasuk and mishlei, so he just applies those universals. That is a very, very dangerous thing. You must start each pasuk as if you never learned before. You never learned anything about the subject. You must start from the pasuk, and start from the pasuk, let the pasuk speak to you. You see? Then you will see the difference in each pasuk, and then each pasuk will speak to you and will help develop your personality, and you'll be able to see the difference, the slight difference between one pasuk and the other. The same thing insofar as a class is concerned. Sometimes kids ask a question, you're not really listening to, there's a certain sense from what angle the student is asking, the way he formulates his question. There's, you could give a general answer, or you listen, there's a certain sense of the direction, the way he formulates this question, that you speak to the student, to his question, to answer the question. Is two different things. Is that sense you could get from mishlei, like if you start each pasuk totally fresh and not take any universals from other pasukim, unless somehow in the steps force you to do that. But the formulation should be according to the words of the pasuk, and you should not even worry about if it contradicts something you said in another pasuk, because that would be a further development if because you followed the one pasuk and you came to one conclusion, then you followed another pasuk and came to a different conclusion, then at that point you compare the two pasukim and ask the question, this is contradictory. That's a further development. But when you first start out, you must start out the pasuk with not what you learned from another pasuk and then keep those ideas. No, you must start out that this pasuk is like the first time you're learning mishlei and giving you new information. It's only when you're through with the analysis, then you could see if it's compared to another pasuk or contradicts another pasuk, if it follows the last pasuk, if it's a continuation of the last pasuk, subject of the last pasuk, it must be analyzed that way. You see? Then you let the pasuk speak to you. Then there's further developments and further analysis. But you have to be careful not to use principles that you already know and you just fit them in. That is a dangerous way of thinking. And if you do have that, then that's what you have to work on. And that, if you do have that problem, then that is the area that you have to work on. We're doing a pasuk vav, and we're saying that the righteousness of the yosher will save them. Well, once again, the pasuk is that the righteousness of the yosher will save them, and the destruction, and Bahabas means the destruction that the Bogey, the rebellious one, wants to do, will trap him. That in itself will trap him. The evil that he wants to do will trap him. Okay. So now, the first half he says that this is the Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says, we already explained that the Yosha is a person that recognizes straightness, and he chooses and loves straightforwardness, clear thinking, straight down the center. And the love of the Yosha, because of the love of the Yosha, he will endure hardships that would cause him the Yosha to endure. Because of his desire for being a Yosha, there's certain situations that he will have that'll be difficult for him, that he must endure to have that Yosha, that he must that the Tom doesn't have. Okay, the Tom who's not involved in the world of learning is just a Tom. So he just lives a good life, and if something comes up, he has to deal with it. The Yosha will do, because of his desire for Yashrus, of that straightness and that thinking, that clear type of thinking, his life is going to endure certain things, and he subjugates himself to the truth. Like it says in by the people of Musa, endure truth. You see? And now the verse comes to let us know that the righteousness of the Yosha will save him from hardships or damage that comes from the Zakum damages, those things that will cause him pain and hardships that come from him with the causes of these hardships and these difficulties is because he wants to endure the truth. Okay, that is what it means that it will save him. In other words, evenly keeled, the last pasuk says that the evenly keeledness will make him think correctly and is like in a practical everyday life. Okay, because he'll naturally think straight. But however, he says now he's talking about the Yosha. Says the Yosha. Besides that, he's in the hardship situation. Because of his endurance, because of his desire for the truth, he must endure truth. Must endure truth. And because of that, it comes out very difficult situations. In other words, it's because of his desire to find truth, he will go through certain hardships. And he will endure these hardships and live with it because of his love of truth and his desire for truth and straightforwardness and always searching for the clear idea, the straight and clear idea. Now, let me explain it from another angle. If a person tries to be a Yosher, and let's say he doesn't have the ability yet, and he puts himself in a certain situation because of his desire for truth, and the pain comes, so he'll leave the situation. To walk out of the situation. You see? The Yosha puts himself in a situation and will endure the pain because he knows that that's the only way he's going to get the truth. You see? So he's willing to endure that pain. His very desire puts him in certain situations which causes him to endure pain. And he doesn't run away from it. He will stand there until he works it through. And his yashrus will save him according to his, that because of the fact that he's evenly keeled and he's not driven from one part to the other, that will save him in this situation. Whereas if he runs away, he might be saved from this type of pain, but he loses out on the world of learning. And insofar as he lost out on the world of learning, whatever results, whatever consequences that is, he loses out on. But however, we're saying that if he sticks to it, with all the pain, what will save him is his tzidkas yisharim, the evenly keeledness of the yosher, will save him. It's equal to a person learning how to play guitar, and his fingers start hurting from the strings. Now, a person says, no, it's too painful, I'm pulling out. Another person says, no, I'm going to stick to it until I build up calluses, and then it won't bother me, but I'm willing to endure the pain because my desire to play the guitar is greater than the pain of the that it's hurting my finger now. You see? So it's worth it for him to stick to it. But now, of course, the question is, what are those pains that he is causing himself, and how does the, whatever it is, how does the tzidkas, the evenly keeledness of the yosher, how does that save him? We're not talking about thinking. In other words, we're not talking about that he thinks it out, but he says the tzidkas of the yosher saves him. You see? So that has to be, and tzidkas meaning evenly keeled, right? That he's not drawn to one end to another, and one of the extremes of the opposite. So that's what needs to be explained at this point. All right, the question is clarifying the word. The question is, what are the hardships of the yosher that his evenly keeledness will help him? Will help him be saved from these hardships? Levi wants to say that the hardships is the emotions. Like there are certain things that Yashris will say. And there are certain things that Yashris tells you to do that run against the emotions, like to give tzedakah. So you don't want to give up the money. You need the money. Different things that it tells you to do, which runs against, or tells you to do something that will go against your laziness. You see, there's different emotions that it affects when you do the action. Okay? So therefore, he's going to have these type of difficulties where, justice tells you to give somebody musa, and you feel uncomfortable giving somebody musa. You have to tell the guy that he did something wrong. You understand? So there's different things that could affect you. There's different things that Yashris tells you that you're obligated to do, you see, that runs contrary to the emotions. Okay? In other words, the Tom doesn't try to perfect himself. He is evenly keeled. He just wants to live a good life. That's all. He just wants to work out his life, live a practical life. The Yosha wants to perfect himself insofar as his knowledge of God is concerned, his relationship to God. He wants to do the correct things, right? He wants to do that which is Yosha, which is correct and straight and acceptable by God, by truth, you see? So therefore, so he's forced to do things which might run contrary to his emotions. Let's say you have to do justice when he desires to learn. I mean, these are conflicts. I mean, he desires both of them. You see? So there are certain hardships which being a yosher, that he will have that other people don't have. Certain conflicts that other people don't have. Now, what helps him pull through, according to the pasuk, what helps him pull through is his evenly keeledness. And the question is how does that, why is it that quality which helps him pull through? Maybe it's the quality of his love of learning. But no, it's not his love of learning that will save him, but it's if you ask me, I would say his love of learning drives him through and pulls him through. You see? He says, no, his evenly keeledness will save him. Okay? Question is, how does the evenly keeledness save him? And the question is like this, if there's a person evenly keeled, so then how could he even have a conflict? He's evenly keeled. That's not what we mean by evenly keeled. Evenly keeled is I have both, I have the desire to save money, I have the desire to expend money. It's just that I'm not addicted to one side over the other. It doesn't mean that I don't have the emotions. Now let's say, for instance, I'm obligated to give tzedakah. Because I'm obligated to give tzedakah, I can't have something of my own. I can't buy something. I won't have enough money to buy my own. Or I'm forced to do something that I feel uncomfortable about, like giving mussar. I mean, that, you know what I mean? I might be able to do the act, but the fact is, I do have emotions. We're human. We're not talking about a saint. Saints, these people are not human. That's saints. In Judaism, we don't have saints, we have human beings. And even lekiel means that you have emotions. And you feel pain. I mean, different things. You have emotions, you're human, it's just not an addiction. There's a difference between... You've got to be careful between the way we use emotions. We people seem to think that all emotions are bad. Emotions are bad. No, emotions are good. That's what makes life worth living. You know what I mean? If you didn't have emotions, how are you going to enjoy learning? You know what I mean? Right. So the thing is that so we have emotions, what we're against is addictions. By addictions, I mean it affects the way you make decisions. That's what it is. Even the ocean enjoys the physical pleasures. We're not talking about a person like a person that separates from all the physical pleasures, like a nubby, you know. You know what I mean? Like, there's certain people that's a rare person. Most people we see from Chazal, I mean, the way they live their lives, that they, you know, they used to live normal lives. So, you know, but they had a love of learning. It doesn't mean that there was... The extremism came in afterwards, you know what I mean? Like, I think Christianity brought in extremism to a large extent. You know, but we don't have that extremism. We live a normal life, and we enjoy the physical pleasures. And insofar as you get involved in learning, it forces you to do actions and in a certain way that if you weren't trying to be involved in learning, you wouldn't have to do these actions. Right. So generally, let's say like this. That what drives you to truth is that there's a love of truth, okay? But however, if you have an addiction in one area over another, that's going to prevent you from carrying out certain of the actions. It won't allow you to carry out different actions. It'll prevent you. The addiction will prevent you from carrying out the actions. But if you're evenly keeled, means you don't have an addiction in any of the pleasures, you see. You don't have an addiction in any of your desires, so then you can be successful. It will allow you to be successful in your endeavors of what you're doing. But if you have an addiction, the addiction will stop you from carrying out your endeavors of your yashras. Even though you might have the desire to learn, but the addiction will stop you. So therefore, it's the evenly keeledness which saves you. In other words, the drive to live the correct life, and the drive to endure pain, that's the drive for truth. A love of truth, a desire for truth, you're drawn to the truth, you see? But however, you still have your everyday life, you still have pleasures, and some of those ideas can run contrary to your pleasures, to your enjoyments, or to certain emotions that you have. You have fears, you have certain things. But if you're addicted to the fear or the emotion that the ideas of yashras are contradictory to, if you're addicted, so then you can't do it. So you can't live the life of yashras. It will not allow you to live that life. Even if you have the drive, you'll be stopped in your tracks. You see? But however, if you're evenly keeled, that would allow you to pull through. When you have difficulties, you'll be able to pull through to get to your goal. To whatever, to do the correct action, what learning tells you to do. Before we continue the pasuk, there's another question that we have, and that is this. A separate question that was asked that has nothing to do with the pasuk. We'll come back to the pasuk. The question is that in learning, I think we mentioned this yesterday, that when you're learning, so you have the pasuk, then you have a question, and naturally the mind jumps to certain universals that you already have. Okay? That's not the way to do it. It must be, you must work out the pasuk and move straight from the pasuk, and the pasuk comes to a universal. When it comes to a universal that you have, or a universal that you don't have, or a universal that contradicts other things that you have, it doesn't matter. You must follow the pasuk. Then, if it contradicts something, then fine, then you have to work that out. That's a further development. But however, we said that one way, applying principles that you already have is not a good thing, But however, you must be able to stick to the abstraction, just step by step. The same thing when somebody asks you a question. Many times somebody asks you a question, so you have a certain philosophy and you throw in your philosophy. Or you listen to the question, and then from the question you build up step by step from the question towards a certain answer. But it's the subject itself that you're moving with. And the question is, if you have the problem where you throw in the universals, so the question is, what can you do to change from the way your mind goes to the universal to stick with the subject? Okay? Now, the answer is like this. Let's say you hear a shiur from a Rebbe, and he goes step by step, and he goes through. Now, in every step, you'll notice that your mind, when there was a question asked, your mind jumps to a certain principle. Well, the Rebbe didn't jump to a certain principle. He just took a certain step. You understand? Different than what you would have taken. In other words, your mind is working during the class, okay? But you're coming up with past principles that you already have, right? And you can't abstract from that step wherever you are to move to the next step. You automatically jump to the answer. So now you have, so when you go up back and review, you have to remember your answers, and you have to see where your answer went and his answer. That his answer went, your answer went in one direction, and his answer went in a different direction. So you have to compare the two answers, and you must see logically why one is wrong and one is right. When you review it, you must see, in other words, like this, you must define why it is wrong. It's not enough to know that you're wrong. It's not enough to accept it, to either sense or think it through and see that the Rebbe is right. That's not enough. You must go back and see why you are wrong. What logical mistake did you make? You must define clearly the logical mistake. You have to be like in the world of logics, but only insofar as your mistakes are concerned. You see? So therefore, you must go over, when you are working out the problem, you must see the mistakes and direction you're going, and you must define the problem. That's what people don't do. Most people, what they do is they review the Rebbe's shiur, and they just want to go over the Rebbe's shiur to get the Rebbe's shiur correct. That is not what you're supposed to do. I mean, that's what you should do, that's a part of the training. But part of the training is, before you get the Rebbe, while you're working out the Rebbe's shiur, you have to go back to your old one. And sometimes it's hard, because you don't want to look at your own mistakes. Here you have to, when you know it's a mistake, you have to look back and say, what is the stupid mistake that I made? And see that it's stupid, but then define logically why it is irrational. So you have to deal with that. That's a very hard thing to do, you see? But however, I think that is the direction you must take to undo your jumping to conclusions and not just following the step by step. You must see exactly, define logically what the mistake is. In other words, reviewing the shiur and knowing that you are wrong will not undo a problem. There's only two ways of undoing a problem, either by defining the logic, or if there's a powerful emotion that's forcing you to be irrational, then you must look to the emotion. But the first step is to look to the logic. Maybe you're just making a logical mistake, and you straighten out the logic, and you will correct yourself. You don't have to deal with your emotions. If you find that by working out the logics again and again and again, and then it still doesn't straighten out, you start seeing a powerful emotion, so then you have to deal with the emotion. Well, in other words, you have to figure out both. One is why I went the wrong way, and what makes his way the right way. That's why the Meiri says that whenever you see a statement, you should always question it to such an extent that it looks like you're breaking it down. Yes, so when you start looking at the correct way, then start formulating questions against the correct way to see if you can break it down, and then add the answer to the questions of the correct way, so then you see the correct method. But before you do that, you must know what caused you to make a mistake. You see? So there's two different things. There's knowing the mistake and then analyzing the truth. Knowing the mistake is defining logically what is the logical mistake, put it in terms of logic, that you see clearly what the mistake was. And two, in terms of getting the shear, is to question every step, is to look as if you want to break it down, like from every different angle. And as you answer the question, so then it becomes clear. It becomes clear to the mind of the correct way of operating. An example is like this. Let's say, for instance, there are people that hold they're unjust, and therefore they think they're right, even then that whatever you do is wrong because I'm right and you're wrong. Okay. Now, when they say that, they are, what's the logical mistake in that? Forget about the unjust, that it's unjust. But just look at the logic. The logic is, he's saying, that really in reality you and I are equal. What's the difference between the two of us? Okay? And I'm saying that we're unequal. So I'm taking equals and making them into non-equals. I'm saying, in one case I'd say 2 is equal to 2. In another case I'll say, no, 2 is equal to 3. You know what I mean? That is irrational. But that's what you do. Many times you make irrational decisions in life because the emotion doesn't allow you to see the rationale. So I'm saying, instead of looking only at the emotion, first look at the rationale. First see the irrationality of the act. You see? And many times that'll be enough to stop you from doing an irrational act without getting into all the emotions and all philosophies. Just see that it's irrational. You see? So you must look at the irrationality of your actions. That is the first step, and to define what the irrationality is. Let's say, I'm explaining back the example. Let's say, for instance, A steals from B. And A say, I have the right to steal from you. Okay? Well, now, why do I have the right? Why do I have the right to take away your things? So I'm saying I am better than you, right? But justice and reality dictates that, no, why am I better than you? What makes me better? Could you tell me what makes me better than you? No, really, we're equal. And you own things and I own things. Insofar as law is concerned, there should be no difference. Why am I better than you? You see? So it's irrational. I'm making equal. I deny the equality where there should be equality, and I deny that equality and make us into unequals. You see? That is the logic. That is irrational. Because in this case, why should I be better than you? Again, another example. Another example, let's say a person smokes, right? Now, the thing is, today we know that if you smoke, you can get terrible diseases, cancer, emphysema, okay? Now, the thing is whether he thinks about it or not, he's making a decision between two things. He's evaluating pain versus